From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Welcome to the latest edition of the Wildcast podcast. I'm Justin Spears here with Dominic Bachaco. We are a part of the Arizona Daily Star, and every month or so we come out to Frog and Firkin. Normally during the football and basketball season, we host a live podcast every Tuesday before home games, but since it is the summer months, we are slowing things down and we are only coming out here once a month. But a huge thanks to Frog and Firkin for always hosting us on gorgeous afternoons right here on University. Dominic Bachaco here with me, and we'll also hear from Bruce Pasco, who covers the Arizona men's basketball team. He's going to provide his analysis on the current state of the Wildcats as they head into the summer. Dominic, a lot of players for next season's team. There's a lot of turnover, but only so many scholarships. And we'll talk about that and how Arizona can overcome their little scholarship debacle. Dom, how's it going, man?
Good.
Happy summer.
And sliding into Arizona basketball really quick, I'm excited to hear what Bruce has to say about Jordan Brown.
Huge pickup.
Huge addition for Sean Miller. A year later, maybe I should say. But Jordan Brown, an Arizona Wildcat, we'll get that insight from Bruce.
1 year later. Man that we were all thinking, hey, you know, the 2018 class, you know, Brandon Williams is still committed. They still need a big. Jordan Brown could probably play significant minutes right away. He decided to go to Nevada, and rightfully so, because you look at Nevada. Mm-hmm. I mean, even without him, they were a preseason ranked top 10 team. And when you have a superstar freshman adding to that mix, you kind of get this Midwest powerhouse.
And he didn't play.
And he didn't play
10 minutes a game.
Barely played. So we'll hear from Bruce Pasco coming up in just a little bit. We'll be talking some Arizona basketball. But Dominic, quick shout out, because it is summer. So Arizona baseball finished up their season. Arizona softball fell in the Women's College World Series. But it's now that point where postseason awards are being handed out. And the baseball season is still going on. You know, playoffs are still going on. Did you see that North Carolina game from the other day? Mm-hmm. I think it was against Auburn. Mm-hmm. 11 runs for Auburn in the first inning.
In the first inning, yeah.
That was amazing.
It was ridiculous. On like 9 hits. In the first inning, I'd be dumb. Like, if you're in the stands, like, all right, watch my game.
But for Arizona, their season ended. They did not make the NCAA tournament. But they did have an All-American on their team. Second baseman Cameron Cannon earns first-team All-American honors. First Wildcat to do it since 2015, which is Scott Kingery. And Cameron Cannon was also drafted in the second round by the Boston Red Sox. He is really talented. Dom, what do you think about Cameron Cannon the season that he had?
You said it. That was the comparison I was going to make with Scott Kingery. Super similar players. Cannon, I mean, they're both talented at the plate. It's hard to give one of them an edge. You saw both of them go in the second round of the draft. So obviously similar skill sets, similar amounts of talent. And Scott Kingery, currently kind of an everyday player due to some injuries with the Phillies. But Cannon's, I mean, he's going to have a career. It's hard seeing him not pan out in one way or another. It's not going to be in the bigs right away. You know how that goes in pro baseball. But good for Cameron Cannon. Well-deserved. Had a great year for Arizona and kept him relevant all year to the point where they were almost a tournament team after being nowhere near that just like a month before the season ended.
I just think it's insane that you have a player like Cameron Cannon on your team, and then on the third base spot, you have Nick Quintana, you have Dayton Dooney, you have Austin Wells, like these names that performed. Wasn't Austin Wells, didn't he get Pac-12 Freshman of the Year?
Freshman of the Year, you're
yes.
right.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. So, you, so have, yeah.
you have all this
freshman,
talent.
Right.
You have this All-American, you have this Pac-12 Freshman of the Year, and yet you don't make the NCAA tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And Dom, you're a baseball guy, you know this better than me. I just think Arizona and their baseball team, they fell a little bit behind just because of pitching.
Pitching, absolutely pitching. I mean, it's so cliche to say that defense wins championships, gets to the playoffs, especially in college baseball when all offenses are really good. Arizona's is really, really, really good, and it's going to be next year when they get a lot of that talent back, young talent back. But you can only go so far with your pitching. I mean, with how much Arizona struggled, to see how good their offense was, how many games they still lost in the Pac-12, it's obvious to pin it on pitching, and it's not unfair. I mean, they struggled on the mound throughout the season, and it bit them come tournament time.
And a lot of these guys, they're already signing their contracts. We saw Nick Quintana, he signed his deal with the Detroit Tigers, so he's definitely going pro, and I think it's good for these guys. You know, go get that money. And that's the cool thing about, you know, college sports is, you know, as much as you want to see them hang around at Tucson and see their career blossom, it's also really cool to see them go pro and achieve their dreams. So big shout out to Cameron Cannon. Big shout out to Nick Quintana and the Arizona Wildcats receiving honors. Dom, so we can't just, you know, skip over this because it is the NBA Finals. And there are some Arizona Wildcats in the NBA Finals. Steve Kerr, the head coach for the Golden State Warriors. Andre Iguodala, we know what he's doing with the Golden State Warriors. Bruce Frazier, assistant. That's the Arizona connection. But Game 5 of the NBA Finals was a night I will never forget. I mean, you talk about a night that could possibly change the landscape of the NBA as we know it. Kevin Durant goes down. He exits the game with an Achilles injury. We don't know the extent of the Achilles injury. I know general manager Bob Myers got emotional after the game. If we're going to be honest, I think that was a little bit of a phony act by Bob Myers. Okay, I know you're a Warriors fan, Dom. I want to get your perspective on this. But when I saw Bob Myers get emotional, I saw a whole lot of sniffling and not a lot of tears. It just seemed like a big, big phony act. But at the same time, you kind of feel for Bob Myers because I think he knows deep down inside that could have been Kevin Durant's last game wearing a Golden State Warriors uniform.
Maybe it was a phony act, but the emotions are real. You know, I didn't get that. Again, I'm a Warriors fan, so take that with a grain of salt. But I didn't get that it was a phony act. Bob Myers has always been a stand-up guy. He's a class act.
He's one of the best at what he does.
Right. Oh, absolutely. And the players love him. And you can't say a bad thing about the guy. So I didn't really see it as a phony act. But regardless of whether or not it was, the emotions are real. The fallout from last night was, I think, that probably one of the more memorable moments of the night, just because. Did you see when Kevin Durant was getting helped off the court? You see who helped him all the way back to the locker room?
Andre Iguodala
and Steph Curry. Two starters during an NBA Finals game. Two starters helped this man off the court.
And not just to the tunnel and then rush back.
All the way to the locker room.
They walked him all the way to the locker room.
Well, I mean, they were carrying him to the locker room. And then to see Bob Myers. I mean, when's the last time you saw a general manager after a game? I mean, because Steve Kerr, they brought in Steve Kerr first, and he said Bob Myers is going to come in here and he'll give you the scoop. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
General managers don't do that. I mean, you don't see that happen when people get hurt. So the gravity of the situation was, I mean, it was hard to put into words, and you saw Bob Myers couldn't do it, Steve Kerr couldn't do it, Kevin Durant, Jay Williams this morning, Tuesday morning.
Did I get up?
Yeah, was talking about, he was watching the game with Kevin Durant afterwards, after Kevin Durant left, obviously, and said it was just, I mean, he was crushed, he was hard. I mean, it's tough. The whole thing was tough to put into words, and it's tough to see. It's easy for us to get caught up in the moment and get caught up in, it's just a game. It's a game of basketball, right? But the players who are playing the game are more than, I mean, it's their livelihood. They're human beings. If you question Durant's competitiveness, his authenticity, and was he hurt? Obviously he was. It's unfair to question these guys' mentality in that aspect because nobody knows what they're going through. They're human beings. The work that Kevin Durant had to put in every single day for the last month to get back here, he was receiving treatment all day long, every single day, all day. He might have not been getting work on the court, but you better believe he had a basketball in his hands every single day getting some kind of work in. And just to see how that all played out, how hard it hit the team, Bob Myers, it's tough to put into words because it means so much to him.
The one thing that I agree with Bob Myers on, I still think the emotions were, it kind of gave me the wrong vibe. But Bob Myers said one thing that I agree with. Kevin Durant, with the Achilles injury, he's not going to be playing basketball for a little bit. I mean, he's going to be out for a long time. And the thing about Kevin Durant is that he is all about basketball 100% of the time. Like, that's all he wants to do. You saw, what was it, a couple months ago when he snapped back to a couple of reporters. He said, listen, man, all I want to do is go to the gym and play basketball and go home. That's all I want to do. Kevin Durant won't have that opportunity for a long time because the Achilles injury, and you even saw the slow motion video of when he planted that foot. You saw his calf, you know, I was talking to TL earlier off the air. It was like, you know, when women are pregnant and they feel like the baby kicking inside and you could see the stomach move. That's what Kevin Durant's calf looked like.
And it
did not look good. And it just looked like it exploded.
Well, Boogie Cousins tore his Achilles. That's what the Warriors fear Kevin Durant's injury is. Of course, he's getting an MRI on Tuesday, so we'll know more about that later in the day. But they fear it's a torn Achilles. Boogie Cousins had the same thing in January of 2018. Didn't return until January of 2019. So it will be a year-long thing with Kevin Durant. It probably means he's going to re-sign with the Warriors, get his $31.5 million player option next year while he recovers. If he comes back for the Warriors in the latter half of the season, it just depends how bad the injury is. It could be a full tear, could be a partial tear. I mean, there's a million things it could be if it's an Achilles, but none of them are good. Mm-hmm. But again, going back to Kevin, he just wants to play basketball. He's a two-time reigning finals MVP. There's no doubt. And this is the thing, too. Everyone focuses on the reports they want to focus on. People close to the situation, close to Kevin Durant, said that the game he was always targeting was Game 5 of the NBA Finals. When did he come back?
Game 5 of the NBA Finals.
So you can sit here and go, well, he was practicing a few days earlier and they want him to play then. Like, sure, Kevin Durant wanted to be out there right away. He didn't want to miss any time. But it just goes to show. I mean, he came back in Game 5 and was going off. He was on pace to score about 35, 40 points.
Well, and the Warriors are smart with their injuries, because that one game when they sat out Clay, mm-hmm. they said sitting him out was more tactical.
Mm-hmm.
Because they need Clay Thompson in the latter part
of this
series.
It's a seven-game series. And if they played Clay Thompson in, what was that, Game 3?
Yes.
If they played him in Game 3 and he did something similar to what happened to Kevin Durant on Monday, then the Warriors aren't even in the position. They probably lose the next two and the series is over. So it's definitely tactical. As far as the blame game goes, I'm not really interested in playing that game. You can blame it on the trainers, Bob Myers.
I think it's got to be everybody. Kevin Durant, too.
And that's the thing, is it doesn't matter at this point. You can blame whoever you want. I mean, who's it going to help, blaming Bob Myers or pointing fingers at the trainers or Kevin Durant or, you know, people who called Kevin Durant out for his authenticity in the whole situation? It doesn't matter anymore. It's not going to help him get back to the court sooner. It's not going to stop what happened in Game 5. It's a little bit of everybody, like you said, but it's just irrelevant at this point. And hats off to the Warriors training staff, first of all, getting Kevon Looney ready. He was supposed to be out for the series, came back, and has put in valuable minutes. Re-aggravated his chest injury in Game 5, but he's likely to play Game 6. Klay Thompson, like you said, how they handled that whole situation was flawless. Came back in Game 4 and led the Warriors in points at the 28. Obviously hit big shots down the stretch in Game 5 that extended the Warriors' season. So it's just there's so many different pieces to it, but the root of it all is you got to feel bad for Kevin Durant. The dude just wants to play basketball, and he's not going to be able to do so for at least the next year.
Whether that's in Golden State or whether that's in New York, it's going to be a long time.
Well, and that's the thing, too. Even if Kevin Durant didn't get hurt, we'll just talk about this really quick. The whole narrative was, and I think Stephen A. Smith was the first one to report this, if the Warriors lost this series, Kevin Durant would come back because it would prove that, hey, the Warriors need me to win. And if they won, he'd probably bolt for another team, likely the Knicks or wherever Kyrie Irving ends up. But my whole thought process was, if KD came back, even if they won the series, if KD came back and they won the series, like, again, he had 11 points in 12 minutes, it was a very good chance that Kevin Durant was going to do something special. But if he comes back and they win, it shows that they need him. Because they were down 3-1, he comes back, they won three straight, shows they need him. And if he didn't come back and they lost, then it still shows that they need him. So either way.
And Klay Thompson said that yesterday during the press conference. He said, you know, this whole narrative that we're better without Kevin Durant, like, this guy's a two-time finals MVP. This guy is probably the best player on the planet. To think that we're a better team without him, that's quote-unquote ludicrous.
And it showed, and they were so much better with him on the court. The defense was terrible. It has been the entire series for the Warriors. It was terrible in the first quarter last night, and they were still, I don't want to say easily, but they were beating the Raptors. I mean, they were 19-11. I think it was like an eight-point game at one point. Obviously, they stretched that as the game went on. But with Kevin Durant on the floor, it wasn't even close. They're such a better team, and now they got to do it without him again.
Real quick, Dom, before we get our guy Bruce Pascoe on the show, let's talk about Arizona football recruiting. Just real quick, Arizona football landed two offensive linemen last weekend. In a span of 3 hours, like Arizona football, Kevin Sumlin doubled his 2020 recruiting class in just a span of a couple hours, landing a pair of offensive linemen. Josh Baker, center from Missouri, he's a three-star guy, and also offensive tackle from Houston, Cedric Melton. Now, three-star guys.
2020?
2020 class. Mm-hmm. Three-star guys, they join Kerry Crump, who's a cornerback out of California, and also Will Plummer, quarterback from Gilbert, Arizona, plays at Gilbert High School just up the road. But, you know, these offensive linemen, they're not the eye-opening prospects. You see the other schools that they were considering. Josh Baker was considering Ball State, Arkansas State. Cedric Melton was the same way. He was considering Arkansas State, Houston Baptist, Houston. So Arizona landing these guys, these aren't like the prospects that are like, oh, this is going to make or break Arizona's class. But I agree with Michael Lev. He said he tweeted this out as soon as the story came out about these two joining Arizona's 2020 class. I'm a firm believer in building from the inside out. You get some offensive linemen, and they did in the 2019 class. Mm-hmm. They're getting some JUCO transfers, getting some big guys from the state of Texas. They get those guys, and then they match that in the 2020 class, you're going to get a bunch of bigger players. And also, it doesn't hurt getting guys from Texas and Missouri, because those are some big boys out there in the Midwest and in the South. So I applaud Kevin Sumlin and the coaching staff and first-year offensive line coach Kyle Devan for going out and getting these guys.
Building from the inside out is a huge thing in football, because if you don't have an offensive line, you don't have much on offense, especially with how power heavy the game is now at the position of quarterback. You need a good quarterback to win college football games, and if you don't have a good offensive line, your quarterback's going to be irrelevant.
So you saw that with Khalil Tate.
With Khalil Tate, and they're going to need it with guys like Kevin Doyle or Grant Kinnell, whoever it is, the year after Khalil Tate. They need an offensive line. It's probably priority number one for Kevin Sumlin moving forward, because they're going to need to keep their pocket protected, and that starts with the offensive line. Again, you said it, these aren't huge names, but they're guys from Texas, and that's never a bad thing.
It's depth.
Yeah, exactly.
Depth always helps.
Well, yeah. And
especially on the offensive line.
And again, you've seen how depleted their line has been in the last few years. So injuries certainly play a role, and these are the kind of guys that are going to be able to step in and play minutes, valuable minutes, when starters go down.
All right, Dom. I'm rubbing my hands.
Drum roll.
Because this is the best part of the podcast. Very special guest, our guy Bruce Pasco, reporter for the Arizona Daily Star, covers the Arizona basketball team. What's going on, Bruce?
Best part. Not much. It's, like I said, it's a little slow these days.
It's slow, but Arizona getting Jordan Brown, former McDonald's All-American. Last year, he chose Nevada over Arizona, but then decides to transfer. He is going to transfer down here to Tucson. We'll have to sit out for the 2019-20 season, but a solid pickup for Arizona nonetheless.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy who could replace Chase Jeter at a minimum, it sounds like, and he's got some ball handling skills, I think, for his size and athleticism that really makes him pretty versatile for a big guy. I mean, he'll probably end up playing mostly the five, but he could play the four in a pinch, or he certainly has some mobility and ability to help the offense that way. It'll be interesting to see how they use him. And also, Sean Miller's had some success with transfers coming in and learning his system for a year, and I think that's a big key, too. He gets to learn the system and work on his conditioning and strength and all that and be ready to go in 2021.
I think this is a huge pickup for Arizona, only because it takes some pressure off the coaching staff a little bit for the 2020 recruiting class, not just because of Jordan Brown, but they also got Kentucky shooting guard Jabari Baker. So, just in case there's a lot of turnover for this upcoming season's team, it doesn't put a lot of pressure on Miller to go out and get some guys to replace him, because they have not only two guys already lined up for next season, but two guys with college experience.
Right, and they're kind of locked in the sense that they'd be transferring in. They're sitting out a year, so there's going to be almost no incentive for them to leave, unless there's some, sanctions that come down, in which case usually waivers are given and everybody could leave if that happens. But assuming it doesn't, you can pretty much count on them being there 2021, and it's hard to count on anybody being around in 2 years in this day and age of college basketball.
That's the biggest thing. I mean, they have a five-star recruit McDonald's All-American for the class of 2020. I mean, they're essentially ahead of the game, and you can throw Jamal Baker into that mix too, but Jordan Brown is essentially a five-star guy for your next class. And not only that, he's now going to sit on the bench and learn from this team, learn Sean Miller's system, and get acclimated to Arizona basketball for the next year, and that's huge. He's essentially going into his quote-unquote freshman year. He'll be a redshirt sophomore at that point, but it'll be his first year with big minutes in college basketball, and he'll have an experience with his club, and that's big. I mean, they're going to lean on him to play big minutes. Again, you don't know what the roster is going to look like, but you would presume he's going to be in a starter's role and in a big spot for Arizona in 2020, and it's big that he now gets to sit with Sean Miller for a year.
What year is Stone Gettings?
He's just a grad transfer, so he'll just be this season.
One and done.
And that's it.
Okay.
Jordan Brown's, unless they go get someone better than the five-star that Jordan Brown is, he's going to start, right?
Oh,
again,
yeah,
you don't know
who's
coming back, but he's a starter.
I'd be shocked if he wasn't.
Yeah.
You never know who they're going to get. Maybe they land some five-star freshman who beats him out, but he's not only is he a big talent, but he'll have a year again to learn that system, and we all know that Miller generally prefers guys who know his system, going to give him the benefit of the doubt when it comes down to playing time. And also, as we also know, usually if you're in the system for a year, you realize what you got to do defensively, and that'll be a key as well.
Well, and that's the thing is, you know, I don't mean to, you know, jump the gun and look ahead to the 2020-21 season, but, I mean, you look at a front court of Jordan Brown, Ira Lee will be a senior, because I can't imagine him bolting for the NBA after this year. I mean, so you can have that as your starting front court, and then you still have players like Christian Coloco still available. I don't know what's going to happen with Zeke Nagy, but he could still be there. So.
Yeah, Bruce, maybe you have a differing opinion on this, but Najee's still going to be here unless he transfers, because I don't think he's going to get huge minutes as a freshman this year.
Well, I think he'll be part of the rotation, but he might be the 7th, 8th guy. You would think he would be a 2-year player at least, because if nothing else, maybe physically he could gain a lot. But you never know. And this, you know, again, this day and age, guys see potential, and now the G League and Down Under, all these places have sort of beefed up their options for these guys. And even if they're not going to be drafted, they might leave at any point. You just never know. But
if
a guy like Ronde Hollis Jefferson stuck around, he was the 6th man, played huge minutes, and was very effective in them. He could have gone pro after his freshman season. He stuck around. I can't see Zeke Nagy leaving. Again, unless he falls so far in the rotation that he transfers or something, but I don't see that happening either. I think, like you said, Bruce, he'll be in the rotation. I just don't think he's going to play big enough minutes to get looks from the NBA.
Yeah, probably not. But, I mean, I don't know exactly where he'd fall out. But then again, it's hard to say, because scouts will sometimes... Yeah. You know, they're always looking at upside, and even if a guy only plays 12 minutes or whatever, they might see a lot. But I do think that, you know, if I had to guess, I think he'd be around a couple of years. Yeah.
Kind of going off of that, you don't know who else is going to be around at the start of this coming season, because once again, Jordan Brown puts Arizona over the scholarship limit. Bruce, can I clear the air on something really quick? Jake Desjardins is...
Thank you.
Is his... Because we keep saying they're at 15 out of 13. Have they officially revoked his scholarship? Are we just presuming that they're going to?
They're not announcing anything along these lines. They haven't even announced that Dutrieve left. And so it's just a matter of, you have to do the math by yourself. And early on, I started accounting for Jake going back to being a walk-on, but lately I haven't even... I just assume that's the case, and I think we can all assume that there's absolutely no way they could give him a scholarship unless two guys
leave.
So you have to take him out. He was a walk-on, recruited as a walk-on, given a scholarship last year just because they had room. And, you know, that's happened with players before over the years, even with Lute Olson back in the day. You know, if something becomes available. Brett Bielmeyer way back when had that same situation, went off. You know, it just happens. He will be off. But even then, they are one over, even with Jake going back to being a walk-on.
Because I didn't want to be disrespectful, because I called our editor, Ryan Finley.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, I'm doing an outlook of the roster. And I don't want to say that they're taking away Jake Desjardins' scholarship because they haven't officially announced it yet. I just feel like that's disrespectful
to do something like that. He was recruited as a walk-on with the expectation he would be a walk-on, and when it was available from year to year, he could get it. And that's what happened. And I don't think he's upset, because that was the expectation. And all scholarships technically are year to year anyway. So, you know, it's not like they're taking it away. It's just that they gave it to him for a year, and the year is over.
So essentially, the scholarship just ran out. They're not necessarily revoking it. You're just, your scholarship's done. You got a 1 year deal.
Yeah.
In saying that,
so they're
Bruce,
15. They're 15 right now.
Officially 15, but
if you count him. But yeah, right. I think he's been deducted. But I just don't think Arizona said anything.
Gonna say anything
we haven't heard from Miller. At some point, maybe we will, and he'll run down the whole roster.
So let's just say they do take it away.
Right, they're
it's at 14.
Yes.
Who's next out, Bruce?
Well, I think at this point it's so late. You almost wonder if there's going to be some kind of scholarship gymnastics where somebody goes off for a year or. Off scholarship, or, you know, there's questions about Brandon Williams' health. What's he doing? Could he take a year off? I don't know. These are all questions we'd, you know, love to ask John Miller if we had a chance, but that hasn't happened. So, you know, I don't know. And there are a few guys you could still point to and say maybe, you know, maybe at this point, you know, Dylan Smith, for example, grad transfer, he could make a late move somewhere if he wanted to be more of a featured guy than he's going to be next year. But usually if guys want to leave, they make their intentions known by early to mid-April. Here we are in mid-June, and you know, everybody seems to want to come back, and yet not everybody can unless something happens here.
Is it more likely, I think the two names that everyone has on their minds, at least Justin and I, and Bruce, again, correct us if we're wrong in presuming this, but the two names on my mind are Dylan Smith and Alex Barcelo. If one were to leave, it would be one of them. Is it more likely that one of them transfers or that they're both on the roster at the start of next year due to, like you say, some scholarship gymnastics?
It does seem duplicative that they, especially with the guys coming in, they wouldn't need them both. But everything I've heard about Barcelo, he doesn't mind being a role player. He loves the school. He's got a relationship he's happy with, et cetera, personal life, great. So it doesn't strike you as a guy who's unhappy, wants to leave. If you look at his minutes, you might say, well, after sophomore year, this is a guy who might want to go somewhere else. But it doesn't appear that way. You know, Dylan Smith, again, has some options. That, you know, there's always a possibility somebody like Coloco might look at the writing on the wall and realize they've recruited a lot more since he committed and, you know, but again, it's very late for him,
but he's a 7-footer.
Yeah,
if you're a 7-footer, you're gonna play.
He's a shot blocker with a lot of potential, but it's gonna take him a couple of years. I would think he's a guy you want to have around, but you never know. I mean, this is interesting times. I can't remember a situation where they've been this late in the summer and been over the limit.
Dusan Ristich played more games than any Arizona Wildcat in the history of the program, and it was because he was a 7-footer. So Christian Colocal will get his minutes if he sticks around.
Yeah, although Dusan was more skilled offensively right off the bat than Coloco is. Although it was sort of the opposite. Coloco's better rim protector and rebounder at this point, probably in his career.
And you mentioned are guys going to see the writing on the wall? I thought that was going to be a scenario with a player like Terry Armstrong, where, you know, Arizona already has a lot of wings. You see the returning players. You see the other freshmen that they have coming in. And you're from the state of Michigan. Michigan makes a hire of, I don't know, a former Fab Five member in Juwan Howard. Maybe Terry Armstrong will back out and end up going to Michigan. But he's 100% committed to Sean Miller and Arizona. And I think maybe the coaching staff made a promise to him that, like, no, you're going to get on scholarship and we look to play you a lot early on.
Maybe this is a whole other podcast topic. But is this one of the most impressive recruiting jobs that Sean Miller and company have pulled off? Because, I mean, they bring in guys like Terry Armstrong, and not only do they bring in all these five stars, they're all so committed to Sean Miller and the staff, despite everything that's going on. All the outside noise. They're so committed to this coaching staff. I mean, and they always are. I mean, they always are, to Sean Miller's credit. But especially this year, when there's such a cloud over Arizona still, when there's so much noise coming from off the court. I mean, it seems so impressive that they've been able to keep all these guys dedicated to playing in Arizona.
Well, I mean, I think Miller's a really, really good communicator. There's no question about that. He has an amazing ability to get with these guys and believe in him and the way he can talk to them. You know, I think in this case, particularly, I think Nico Mannion was a catalyst for this class. I think once they got him, it was a signal to the other guys, hey, it's going to be okay. Mannion's coming. Everybody loves Mannion. They like playing with him. Certainly Josh Green loves playing with him. That was a big reason they got him. And, you know, and Miller connected not only with Mannion, but also his family and his dad, who was a player at Utah, played overseas, played in the NBA a little, you know, kind of basically recruited him as well. And then the other dominoes started falling into place. And the other thing is that, you know, and this is not to say they didn't do well there, but there is, you know, there's playing time and opportunity to sell with a lot of these guys, and that's part of it too. We saw that, you know, Jordan Brown kind of, I think he went the other direction last year. We all kind of wondered, why did he pick Nevada when that team was loaded with veterans? And we all saw why. So a lot of times kids think opposite of what Brown did, and they think, what's my opportunity? Am I going to be a role player? Am I going to be a starter? What's the deal here? And that certainly, I think, sold Mannion and Green and maybe Armstrong, although I think Armstrong's going to have to battle for some playing time. And you know, Zeke Nagy as well. He'll be in the mix there somewhere. So it's a combination of a lot of things. But I do think Mannion kind of started the ball rolling, really, and it probably helped a little bit that Mannion is from Phoenix and Green's family relocated to Phoenix. They're Australian, but they relocated there. They didn't want their kids to be too far away. Their other son plays at UNLV, and so that also helped a little bit too. But I do think you got to give him a lot of credit. You're right.
Does Arizona make the tournament last season if Jordan Brown committed to Arizona instead of Nevada?
No, I don't think so.
It's hard to tell because he really wasn't clear at Nevada what he was, because I think he sort of
never played.
Didn't play that much.
And
there's some games he played, and then he didn't play at all the next game, or didn't play the second half of a game, and it was hard to tell where he really was. And how would you compare that to where if he was at Arizona, where, you know, certainly he probably would have played more, but what kind of impact would he have? You know, it's hard to say.
It's just, I mean, I'm sitting here thinking about it, like, it's a direct, I mean, that's what happened. I mean, that's the fallout from all of the off-court stuff, is Jordan, a guy like Jordan Brown going to a school where he probably knew going in that he was going to have to earn his minutes and beat out some vets to get some playing time. And Arizona, he would have been a starter and started all 35 games for him. And he would have been one of their best players, if not the best player on the floor. So, that, I mean, that's the fallout of it. I think that's why he probably went to Nevada. And I think now, like you said, guys like Nico Mannion, Josh Green have showed that it's okay to come to Arizona. They have the best top three recruiting class in the country, and they got some talented players. And I think moving forward, guys like Nico Mannion show, especially, I mean, Josh Green's a perfect example because he was so close to Nico Mannion, and ultimately that's why he probably came here. And just the communication that guys like Nico Mannion have with the other recruits, like, hey, it's okay to come here. We're dedicated to Sean Miller. This is who he is. And Sean Miller's probably relaying those same kind of values. And it just gets everyone to buy in. And now Jordan Brown, I guess, felt like in a position where he could trust his program moving forward, or now he's coming next season.
Yeah, and the one thing I've heard consistently from the recruits and their family, whoever is the contact point, when I ask them, usually I'll ask them, did you have any concerns about what's going on with the NCAA and the FBI? And they almost always say, well, we've talked to everybody at Arizona, we feel comfortable with it. So that, you know, for whatever the case is there, they've explained their side of it, you know, and they seem to be okay with that. And then I think the other factor is most players don't feel like they're going to be around more than a year or two anyway. Mm-hmm. And if anything does come down, it's going to be in 2021, and they may be gone by then. So, mm-hmm. you know, I think that probably that stuff is not that big a factor with the guys who are actually playing.
And now moving forward, again, Jordan Brown's a 2020 guy now. So 2020, 2021. So he's already showing people for that recruiting class that it's okay to come here. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And again, you don't know what's going to happen with the NCAA and how that's all going to play out in their investigation into Arizona. But as of right now, people are obviously have no problem coming to Arizona, and everybody who's committed is proving that.
Well, again, I mean, say even if the NCAA comes down, say, next February, mm-hmm. and says Arizona sits out the 21 tournament, or will have to, then all those guys are going to have a chance to leave and be eligible to play somewhere else immediately. You know, this climate that's the way it happens. So even if a guy like Baker or Brown, that happened and they didn't want to deal with it, then they could go. But they might also want to stay, because a lot of times, guys, it's about opportunity and getting themselves their draft stock up, et cetera, et cetera. You know, maybe they like school. You know, they might stick around anyway.
Who knows? Maybe by the next podcast, we'll figure out who's leaving Arizona, determining the scholarship gymnastics, as Bruce calls it.
I like that.
By the way,
need a logo for that.
Episode 200. Yeah, we do. Ryan Lopez, yeah. Where are you at? Episode 200 coming up. It's going to be huge. We're going to be doing awards. We're going to be talking about the breakout player for Arizona Athletics, the most improved player, the freshman of the year. Like, we have a lot of award categories. Don, we talked about this. Episode 200 for the Wildcast podcast is going to be something special.
It's a big one.
I can't wait.
It's a big one. 200. And again, thank you to Frog for being the gracious host that you are. We love coming in here, doing our thing every month, every week. Every other week during the season? Is that what it was last season?
Every home game.
Yeah, so, I mean, over the summer, thank you for allowing us to come in here and all our listeners. 200, thank you.
Episode 200, coming your way. That would do it for this episode of the Wildcast Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and make sure you download the Wildcaster app. It's free and available on the App Store and Google Play. For Bruce, for Dom, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening.